report WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Charlottesville has a new city attorney. Virginia's House clerk rejects three of the governor's vetoes. And why is it so hard to find affordable housing in Virginia? And what might the candidates for governor do about it? Also, political analysis from Jeff Shapiro. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, May 16th. The city of Charlottesville has a new city attorney. John Maddox comes to Charlottesville from Asheville, North Carolina, where he served as deputy city attorney. According to a press release, he provided counsel on a range of municipal legal issues, including land use and zoning, policing, and intergovernmental matters. In a statement, Maddox said that, quote, strong partnerships with council, staff, and the community make the best legal work in local government, and he's looking forward to bringing that to the city. The clerk of Virginia's House of Delegates has rejected three of Governor Glenn Youngkin's recent vetoes in the state's revised two-year budget. The vetoed bills all involved health care in Virginia. The Virginia Mercury reports that clerk Paul Nardo posted a letter on Virginia's legislative information system that he would not formally publish the vetoes because they violate Virginia's constitution. The rejections blocked Youngkin's vetoes of bills to expand access to weight loss drugs in the state's Medicaid program, to provide additional state and federal Medicaid reimbursements to nursing homes to bolster staff growth efforts, and to stop the state from issuing a contract to better manage state employee health benefits. Acting within the clerk's purview as keeper of the rolls, Nardo said that Youngkin had attempted to veto the provisions without also vetoing the budget appropriations that contained them. Early vote data show local primaries are driving turnout, at least so far. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope is digging into the numbers.
Early voting started earlier this month, and so far the numbers are showing a strong turnout in places that have primary elections for sheriff and Commonwealth's attorney. That's according to numbers from the Virginia Department of Elections, posted to the Virginia Public Access Project. Republican operative Jeff Ryer points to the hotly contested Republican primary for sheriff in Chesapeake.
Sheriff's contests, whether they're in primaries or general, tend to bring out quite a few participants who are very interested in the outcome of it. That may have something to do with the fact that when it comes to local patronage, sheriffs really are the king.
One of the House districts that's seen heavy early turnout so far was formerly held by Jay Jones, who is now running for Attorney General against Henrico prosecutor Shannon Taylor. Here's Democratic operative Ben Tribbett.
If you have a contentious Commonwealth Attorney's race, you probably know what side of that race you sit on as a voter, and you're probably a Jay Jones voter in that city. So you're not going to slowly return your ballot because you know who you're voting for. I could see the Fairfax and Arlington return rates being a little bit slower this year, even though there were more requests, because they're waiting to learn who these candidates are.
Democrats have six candidates running for lieutenant governor, so he says voters are still trying to figure out which candidate they want to support before voting early. Michael Pope.
Well, as the June primaries draw closer, candidates are stepping up their TV ad campaigns. Virginia Public Radio politics analyst Jeff Shapiro joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
We are standing outside of the executive mansion where Governor Glenn Youngkin is about to move out of the building and be replaced by the next governor, which brings us to our first topic today, the advertising campaign. 2025 has begun officially. Campaign 2025 has begun. And Jeff Shapiro, we're seeing advertisements all over television.
There's a big Democratic primary for lieutenant governor and another Democratic primary for attorney general. And half of the six Democratic aspirants for LG are on the air, and both candidates for the Democratic AG nomination are on the air. And if there is a common thread in all this advertising, it's Democrats attacking Donald Trump. You know, this is not a Trump-friendly state, and this is clearly an opportunity for Democrats to sort of appeal to the base hostility, pun intended, for Donald Trump. There's also some Republican advertising afoot. Winsome Earl Sears, the putative Republican nominee for governor, is up with a biographical piece. It's clearly intended to elevate her profile, but given the manner in which she represents herself, talking about her work as a small business person, as a mother, as someone active in prison ministry, as a former Marine, really intended to sort of inoculate her, immunize her from the inevitable Democratic attempts to attack her as to the right of reason.
One of the things we've seen in campaign 2025 so far is people talking about their alternative lifestyles. We have a Republican candidate who's talking about being part of the fetish community and a Democratic candidate who's talking about her swinger lifestyle. Jeff Shapiro, what's going on with 2025?
Perhaps this is a bit of self-outing. I suspect it is tied largely to this elevated awareness of the private lives, and in the case of Donald Trump, at times arguably bad behavior when out of public view. The notion in politics that the best defense is a good offense, that seems to be driving a lot of this.
One of the chief political operatives to come out of the Republican world in Virginia politics worked on Trump 2024, which obviously was successful. And Jeff Shapiro, I understand he's now using that on the international stage?
Chris LaCivita, who got his start in Virginia politics working for a very successful Republican by the name of George Allen, of course, the co-campaign manager of Trump 2024, was advising the opposition party in Albania, an opposition party that Trumpist in its orientation. It didn't do very well in last weekend's parliamentary elections, but this is an indication of how politics in the U.S., certainly in the Trump era, is affecting politics elsewhere in the globe. Chris LaCivita, also the principal consultant to MAGA Inc., which is the primary, pun unintended, Trump super PAC.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. We've been outside of the executive mansion. Unfortunately, we have not seen the governor walk by. Jeff Shapiro and I are going to be standing out here, and maybe we'll see him and ask him a question. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend.
Ask anyone trying to buy a house in Virginia how the process is going, and you're likely to hear stories of one heartbreak after another. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner explores why it's so hard to get new housing in Virginia and what both candidates for governor would like to see happen if they win.
Virginia's housing problems, like the nation's, date back to the 2008 financial crisis. The influx of homes created a bubble that burst and saw foreclosures at record rates. Developers have been reluctant to ramp up home construction ever since. Only now is the U.S. starting to reach pre-2008 levels of new construction for privately owned housing. Virginia is smack dab in the middle of the national average for such new construction, according to real estate industry Tracker's construction coverage. Their lead data analyst, Michael Stromberg, said incentives to build lean towards new luxury homes. The builders and localities make more money from them, both from the sale and from property taxes. Stromberg said that's a problem for those outside the luxury home market.
All these incentives from the people to the municipalities to the builders, they're all kind of misaligned and not incentivized to provide housing and a lot of it that is affordable.
States have moved to try to address the issue, but localities have long controlled zoning and permitting. That leaves change in the hands of city council and county supervisor meetings, where the loudest voices in the room may be the ones least interested in new homes. Stromberg said fixes usually fall into an either top-down approach, changing state laws to step on local zoning authority, or bottom-up, incentivizing localities to build up more via carrots or sticks. Newport News Mayor Philip Jones is more interested in the bottom-up.
Mandates should not be at the local level, but we can't. I think at the state level, we would appreciate and encourage resources and ways to incentivize some of these local strategies, especially around affordable housing.
That's an opinion shared by many localities. They don't want to lose control. State Senator Skylar Van Valkenburg has been a driving force around new housing efforts at the General Assembly. He helped pass laws to remove parking requirements for new construction, allow accessory dwelling units on existing lots, and other measures that could open the door to new construction. But all those changes empower localities to change their laws. Many haven't, and Van Volkenburg is tired of it. To that end, he worked to pass a bill earlier this year that
creates supply targets for localities and then gives them a bunch of tools that they need to implement to try to reach that target or else have some of their zoning authority taken away.
That effort failed to clear the Senate, but Van Volkenburg promised to bring it back next year. But next year, we'll also see a new governor in Richmond. Here's Democratic candidate Abigail Spanberger on housing.
I want to work to make sure that we're giving cities and counties the flexibility that they need in order to be able to build more housing.
Among ideas she shared with Radio IQ were empowering localities to use their bonding authority to help finance housing, allow affordable tax credits to be transferable, and looking at state certifications and requirements to keep builders in Virginia, among other concepts.
We could open up a lot more opportunity by just ensuring that localities can take some of the actions that they want to take that are necessary for their own ability to build or to welcome development.
Republican candidate Winsome Earl Sears pointed to cooperation between the state and localities. Earl Sears spoke with Radio IQ, but the audio of the recording was damaged. In a follow-up statement, she said preserving local authority was about, quote, partnership, not paralysis. She also pointed to matching infrastructure grants, streamlining approval processes, and expanding tax initiatives for public-private affordable housing partnerships. Bernard Harkless is a partner at the affordable housing builder Lynx Ventures. He said the issues he runs into depend on the locality, often involving different interpretations of different codes and rules. But localities know their constituents better than the state, Harkless said. And creative policymaking aiming to increase housing stock can and should be multi-pronged.
There's multiple paths to get to the outcome. You know, it could be policy, it could be financing, it could be five or six different ways you could solve the problem better. You know, tell me what you're trying to solve for, and maybe there's some creative ways we can get there.
In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Scientists at Virginia Tech have discovered a large, previously unseen virus inside algae. The virus poses no risk to human health, but the discovery reveals just how adaptive viruses can be. Virginia Public Radio's Roxy Todd reports.
PhD student Paula Erazo is the lead researcher on the new discovery.
We could definitely see that there was a virus inserted there, which was something we couldn't see before because the technology wasn't as advanced.
She and a professor, Frank Elward, suspected they might be able to find a virus inside a green algae called Chlamydomonas reinhardii.
People just call it clammy for short.
They bought a 30-year-old lab sample of clammy and began looking at it with genome sequencing technology. The virus had been there, inside the algae, undetected for decades.
What's unusual about this is that the cultures look perfectly healthy. There's no sign that there's any kind of viral infection going on.
Elward says the virus is the largest of its kind ever discovered. It inserts its own genome into the DNA of the host algae, similar to how HIV affects humans. Elward says future research of the virus may teach scientists more about gene editing techniques. Their study was published in the journal Science, and Erazo presented their findings at a conference in France, where she won an award for the best presentation by a graduate student. In Blacksburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
And finally today, solar energy is advancing in Virginia, but many challenges remain. WHRO's Catherine Hafner has more from a panel discussion this week in Virginia Beach.
Virginia is one of the nation's top producers of solar energy, with utility-scale solar farms covering more than 30,000 acres. But policy consultant Angela Navarro says we need a lot more in order to meet ambitious targets outlined by state law.
16,100 megawatts of solar is enough solar to power 1.8 million homes. That's not all of Virginia, but it's a pretty significant swath.
Jay Ford with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation says one barrier is getting local officials on board, especially in smaller rural areas.
There's been a lot of misinformation. There hasn't been a lot of resources to the localities that are being asked to put these projects in.
He says solar advocates should focus on education, as well as incentive programs and zoning policy changes.
Catherine Hafner reporting. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.